Chapter 8 Sea Folk and Kin. It was no surprise to Elaine when she encountered the first maid before reaching her apartments. After all, they were both heading for the same place. Mistress Harfour made her curtsy and fell in with her, carrying an embossed leather folder beneath one arm. She had certainly been up as early as Elaine, if not earlier, but her scarlet tabard appeared freshly ironed, the white lion on her front as clean and pale as new-fallen snow. The servants scurried faster and polished harder when they saw her. Rena Harfour was not a harsh taskmistress, but she kept as tight a discipline over the palace as Gareth Bryn ever had over the guards. "I fear I haven't caught any spies yet, my lady," she said in response to Elaine's question, her voice pitched to reach Elaine's ears alone. "But I believe I uncovered a pair. A woman and a man, both taken in service during the last months of the late Queen your mother's reign. They left the palace as soon as word spread that I was questioning everyone, without waiting to gather a scrap of their belongings, not so much as a cloak. That's as good as an admission, I'd say. Unless they were afraid of being caught out in some other mischief," she added reluctantly. "There have been cases of pilfering, I'm afraid." Elaine nodded thoughtfully. Nayan and Elania had been much in the palace during the last months of her mother's reign. More than enough opportunity to settle eyes and ears in place. Those two had been in the palace, and more who had opposed Morgay's Trakan's claim to the throne, accepted her amnesty once she had it, then betrayed her. She would not make her mother's mistake. Oh, there must be amnesty wherever possible. Anything else was planting the seeds for a civil war— but she planned to watch those who took her pardon very closely, like a cat watching a rat that claimed to have given up interest in the grain barns. "They were spies," she said, "and there may well be others, not just for houses. The sisters of the Silver Swan may have bought eyes and ears in the palace, too." "I will continue to look, my lady," Rena replied, inclining her head slightly. Her tone was perfectly respectful. She did not so much as raise an eyebrow, but once again Elaine found herself thinking of teaching her grandmother to knit. If only Birgitta could handle matters the way Mistress Harfour did. "As well you returned early," the plump woman went on. "You have a busy afternoon, I fear. To begin, Master Norrie wishes to speak with you. On an urgent matter, he says." Her mouth hardened for an instant. She always required to know why people wanted to approach Elaine, so she could winnow out the chaff rather than let Elaine be buried under it, but the first clerk never saw fit to give her even a hint of his business, any more than she told him hers. Both were jealous of their fiefs. With a shake of her head, she dismissed Halwyn Norrie. "After him, a delegation of tabac merchants has petitioned to see you, and another of weavers, both asking remission of taxes because times are hard. My lady does not need my advice to tell them times are hard for everyone. A group of foreign merchants is waiting as well, rather a large group, merely to wish you well in a way that doesn't encumber them, of course. They wish to be on your good side without antagonizing anyone else, but I suggest meeting them briefly." She laid plump fingers on the folder under her arm. "Also, the palace accounts require your signature before they can go to Master Norrie. They'll make him sigh, I fear. I hardly expected it in winter, but much of the flour is full of weevils and moths, and half the cured hams have turned, as well as most of the smoked fish." Quite respectful, and quite firm. "I rule Andor," Elaine's mother had told her once in private, "but at times I think Rena Harfour rules me." Her mother had been laughing, but she sounded as if she meant it, too. Come to think on it, Mistress Harfour as a warder would be 10 times worse than Birgitta. Elaine did not want to meet with Halwyn Norrie or with merchants. She wanted to sit quietly and think about spies, and who had Nayan and Elania, and how she could counter them. Except, Master Norrie had kept Camelin alive since her mother died. In truth, by what she could see in the old accounts, he had done so almost from the day she had fallen into Ravine's clutches, though Norrie was vague about that. He seemed offended by the events of those days, in a rather dusty way. She could not simply shuffle him off. Besides, he never expressed urgency over anything. And the goodwill of merchants was not to be sneered at, even foreign merchants. And the accounts did need to be signed. Weevils and moths? And hams spoiling? In winter? That was decidedly odd. They had reached the tall, lion-carved doors of her apartments. smaller lions than on the doors to those her mother had used, and smaller apartments, but she never considered using the queen's chambers. That would have been as presumptuous as sitting on the lion throne before her right to the rose crown was acknowledged. With a sigh, she reached for the folder. Down the hallway, she caught sight of Solane Morgellon and Carila Sir Toffney hurrying along as quickly as they could without appearing to run. Flashes of silver showed at the neck of the sullen woman squeezed between them, though the kinswomen had draped a long green scarf around her to hide the Eidam's leash. That would cause talk, and it would be seen sooner or later. Better if she and the others did not have to be moved, but there was no way to avoid it. Between kinswomen and seafolk windfinders, rooms in the servants' quarters had been needed to hold the overflow, even with two and three to a bed, and the palace had basements for storage, not dungeons. How did Rand always manage to do the wrong thing? Being male just was not excuse enough. Solane and Carila vanished around a corner with their prisoner. "Mistress Corley asked to see you this morning, my lady." Rena's voice was carefully neutral. She had been watching the kinswomen, too, and a trace of frown remained on her broad face. The sea folk were odd, yet she could fit a clan wave mistress and her entourage into her view of the world, even if she did not know precisely what a clan wave mistress was. A high-ranking foreigner was a high-ranking foreigner, and foreigners were expected to be odd. But she could not understand why Elaine had given shelter to nearly 150 merchants and craftswomen. Neither the kin nor the knitting circle would have meant anything to her had she heard them, and she did not understand the peculiar tensions between those women and the Aes Sedai. Nor did she understand the women the Ashaman had brought, prisoners in truth, if not confined to cells, kept secluded and never allowed to speak to anyone but the women who escorted them through the halls. The first maid knew when not to ask questions, yet she disliked not understanding what was going on in the palace. Her voice did not change by a hair. She said she had good news for you. Of a sort, she said. She did not petition for an audience, though. Good news of any sort was better than going over the accounts, and she had hopes of what this news might be. Relinquishing the folder in the first maid's hands, she said, "Leave that on my writing table, please, and tell Master Nari that I will see him shortly." Setting out in the direction the kin had come from with their prisoner, she walked quickly in spite of her skirts. Good news or no good news, Nari did have to be seen, and the merchants, not to mention the accounts gone over and signed. Ruling meant endless weeks of drudgery and rare hours of doing what she wanted. Very rare hours. Birgitta lay in the back of her head, a tight ball of the purest irritation and frustration. No doubt she was digging through that table piled with papers. Well, her own relaxation this day would be whatever time was required to change out of riding clothes and snatch a hasty meal. So she walked very quickly, lost in thought, and hardly seeing what was in front of her. What did Nari find urgent? Surely not street repairs. How many spies? Small chance Mistress Harfour would catch them all. As she rounded a corner, only the sudden awareness of other women who could channel kept her from running headlong into Van Deen coming the other way. They recoiled from one another in startlement. Apparently the Green had been deep in thought, too. Her two companions raised Elaine's eyebrows. Kirstian and Zarya wore plain white and stayed a careful pace behind Van Deen, hands folded meekly at their waists. Their hair was bound back simply, and they wore no jewelry. Jewelry was strongly discouraged among novices. They had been kinswomen. Kirstian had actually been in the knitting circle itself, but they were runaways from the tower, and there were prescribed ways of dealing with those, set in tower law, no matter how long they had been gone. Returned runaways were required to be absolutely perfect in everything they did, the very model of an initiate striving for the shawl, and small slips that might be overlooked in others were punished swiftly and strongly. They faced a much stronger punishment when they reached the tower, in addition, a birching in front of all the other novices, and even then they would be held to their straight and painful path for at least a year. A returned runaway was made to know in her heart that she never, ever wanted to run away again. Not ever. Half-trained women were just too dangerous to be left loose. Elaine had tried to be lenient the few times she was with them. The kin were not really half-trained, They had as much experience with the One Power as any Aes Sedai, if not the training. She had tried, only to discover that even most of the other kinswomen disapproved. Given another chance to become Aes Sedai, those who could at least, they embraced all of the tower's laws and customs with shocking fervor. She was not surprised at the subdued eagerness in the two women's eyes, or the way they seemed to radiate a promise of good behavior. They wanted that second chance as badly as anyone, just that they were with Van Deen at all. Until now, she had ignored the pair entirely. "I was looking for you, Elaine," Van Deen said without preamble. Her white hair, gathered at the nape of her neck with a dark green ribbon, had always given her an air of age despite her smooth cheeks. Her sister's murder had added grimness, soaked it into the bone, so she seemed like an implacable judge. She had been slender, now she was bony, her cheeks hollow. "These children," she cut off, a faint grimace thinning her mouth. It was the proper way to refer to novices. The worst moment for a woman who went to the tower was not when she discovered she would not be considered fully adult until she earned the shawl, but when she realized that so long as she wore novice white, she really was a child, one who might injure herself or others through ignorance and blundering. The proper way, yet even to Van Deen it must have seemed strange here. Most novices came to the tower at 15 or 16, and until recently none over 18, except for a handful who had managed to carry off a lie. Unlike Aes Sedai, the kin used age to set their hierarchy, and Zarya, she had been calling herself Garinia Rosoinda, but Zarya Alcaesa was the name in the novice books, and Zarya Alcaesa she would answer to. Zarya, with her strong nose and wide mouth, was more than 90 years old, though she appeared well short of her middle years. Neither woman had the agelessness despite their years of using the power, and pretty black-eyed Christian looked a little older, perhaps 30 or so. She was over 300, older than Van Deen herself, Elaine was sure. Christian had been gone from the tower so long that she had felt safe using her true name again. Not at all the usual run of novices. "These children," Van Deen went on more firmly, a deep frown creasing her forehead, "have been thinking over events in Harlan Bridge." That was where her sister had been murdered. And Ispan Shafar. But as far as Van Deen was concerned, the death of a black sister counted with the death of a rabid dog. "Unfortunately, rather than keeping silent about their conclusions, they came to me. At least they haven't blathered where anyone could hear." Elaine frowned slightly. Everyone in the palace knew of the murders by this time. "I don't understand," she said slowly and carefully. She did not want to give the pair hints if they had not really dug up painstakingly hidden secrets. "Have they worked out that it was dark friends instead of robbery?" That was the tale they had put about, two women in an isolated house killed for their jewelry. Only she, Van Deen, Nynaeve, and Lan knew any real measure of the truth. Until now, anyway, it seemed. They must have gotten that far, or Van Deen would have sent them away with a flea in their collective ear. Worse. Van Deen looked around, then moved a few paces to the center of where the hallways crossed, forcing Elaine to follow. From that vantage, they could see anyone coming along either corridor. The novices attentively maintained their positions relative to the green. Maybe they had already gotten that flea for all their eagerness. There were plenty of servants in sight, but no one approaching, no one close enough to overhear. Van Deen lowered her voice anyway. Quietness did nothing to mask her displeasure. They reasoned out that the killer must be Marilella, Saritha, or Kariana. Good thinking on their part, I suppose, but they shouldn't have been thinking about it in the first place. They should have been kept at their lessons so hard they had no time to think of anything else. Despite the scowl she directed at Christian and Zarya, the two over-aged novices beamed with delight. There had been a compliment buried in the scolding, and Van Deen was sparing of compliments. Elaine did not point out that the pair might have been kept a little busier if Van Deen had been willing to take part of their lessons. Elaine herself and Nynaeve had too many other duties, and since they had added daily lessons for the Windfinders, everyone but Nynaeve had anyway, no one at all had the energy for much time with the two novices. Teaching the Athaan Mier women was like being fed through a laundress's mangle. They had little respect for Aes Sedai. and even less for rank among the shorebound. At least they didn't speak to anyone else, she murmured, a blessing, if small. It had been obvious when they found Adelius and Ispan that their killer must be an Aes Sedai. They had been paralyzed with Crimson Thorn before they were killed, and it was all but impossible that the Windfinders knew of an herb only found far from the sea. And even Van Deen was sure the kin numbered no dark friends among them. Ispan had run away herself as a novice, and even gotten as far as Ebudar, but she had been retaken before the kin revealed themselves to her, that they were more than a few women put out of the tower who had decided on a whim to help her. Under questioning by Van Deen and Adelius, she had revealed a great deal. Somehow she had managed to resist saying anything about the Black Adra itself except for exposing old schemes long carried out, but she had been eager to tell anything else once Van Deen and her sister were done with her. They had not been gentle, and they had plumbed her depths, yet she knew no more of the kin than any other Aes Sedai. If there were any dark friends among the kin, the Black Adra would have known everything. So, as much as they could wish otherwise, the killer was one of three women they had all grown to like. A black sister in their midst. Or more than one. They had all been frantic to keep that knowledge secret, at least until the murderer was uncovered. The news would throw the entire palace into a panic. Maybe the entire city. Light, who else had been thinking over events in Harlan Bridge? Would they have the sense to hold silence? Someone had to take them in hand, Van Deen said firmly, to keep them out of further mischief. They need regular lessons and hard work. The pair's beaming faces had taken on a hint of smugness, but it faded a little at that. Their lessons had been few, but very hard, the discipline very strict. That means you, Elaine, or Nynaeve. Elaine clicked her tongue in exasperation. Van Deen, I hardly have a moment for myself to think. I'm already straining to give them an hour now and then. It will have to be Nynaeve. What will have to be Nynaeve? The woman herself demanded cheerfully, joining them. Somehow she had acquired a long, yellow-fringed shawl, embroidered with leaves and bright flowers, that she seldom let herself be seen without, but it lay looped over her elbows. Despite the temperatures, she wore a blue gown with quite a low neckline for Andor, though the thick, dark braid pulled over her shoulder and nestled in her cleavage kept the exposure from being too great. The small red dot, the Kai sign in the middle of her forehead, did look quite strange. According to Malkieri custom, a red Kai sign marked a married woman, and she had insisted on wearing it as soon as she learned. Toying idly with the end of her braid, she looked content, not an emotion anyone usually associated with Nynaeve Almira. Elaine gave a start when she noticed Lan a few paces off, strolling a circle around them and keeping watch down both hallways. As tall as an Aiel man in his dark green coat, with shoulders belonging on a blacksmith, the hard-faced man still managed to move like a ghost. His sword was buckled at his waist even here in the palace. He always made Elaine shiver. Death gazed from his cold blue eyes, except when he looked at Nynaeve anyway. Contentment vanished from Nynaeve's face as soon as she learned what would have to be her. She stopped fingering her braid and seized it in a tight fist. Now you listen to me. Elaine might be able to loll around playing politics, but I have my hands full. More than half the kin would have vanished by now if Elise wasn't holding them by the scruff of the neck, and since she hasn't a hope of reaching the shawl herself, I'm not sure how much longer she'll hold anybody. The rest think they can argue with me. Yesterday, Sumiko called me girl. She bared her teeth, but it was all her own fault, one way and another. After all, she was the one who had hammered at the kin that they ought to show some backbone instead of groveling to Aes Sedai. Well, they certainly had stopped groveling. Instead, they were all too likely to hold sisters up to the standard of their rule, and find the sister wanting. It might not be Nynaeve's fault exactly that she appeared to be little more than 20. She had slowed early. But age was important to the kin, and she had chosen to spend most of her time with them. She was not jerking her braid, just pulling at it so steadily it must be ready to pull free of her scalp. And those cursed sea folk, wretched women, wretched, wretched, wretched! If it wasn't for that bloody bargain, the last thing I need on my hands is a couple of whining, bleating novices. Kirstjan's lips thinned for an instant, and Zarya's dark eyes flashed indignation before she managed to assume meekness again. A semblance of it. They had sense enough to know that novices did not open their mouths to Aes Sedai, though. Elaine shoved down the desire to smooth everything over. She wanted to slap Kirstjan and Zarya both. They had complicated everything by not keeping their mouths shut in the first place. She wanted to slap Nynaeve. So she finally had been cornered by the Windfinders, had she? That earned no sympathy. "I'm not playing at anything, Nynaeve, and you well know it. I have asked your advice often enough." Drawing a deep breath, she tried to calm herself. The servants she could see beyond Van Deen and the two novices had paused in their work to goggle at the cluster of women. She doubted they more than noticed Lan, impressive as he was. Arguing Aes Sedai were something to watch and stay clear of. "Someone has to take charge of them," she said more quietly. "Or do you think you can just tell them to forget all this? Look at them, Nynaeve. Left to themselves, they will be trying to find out who it is in a heartbeat. They wouldn't have gone to Van Deen unless they thought she would let them help." The pair became pictures of wide-eyed novice innocence, with just a hint of offense at an unjust accusation. Elaine did not believe it. They had had a lifetime to work on disguising themselves. "And why not?" Nynaeve said after a moment, shifting her shawl. "Light, Elaine, you have to remember they aren't what we normally expect in novices." Elaine opened her mouth in protest. "What we normally expect, indeed. Nynaeve might never have been a novice, but she had been accepted not all that long ago. A whining bleeding accepted often enough, too." She opened her mouth, and Nynaeve went right on. "Van Deen can make good use of them, I'm sure," she said. "And when she isn't, she can give them regular lessons. I remember someone telling me you've taught novices before, Van Deen. There, it's settled." The two novices smiled broad, eager smiles of anticipation. They all but rubbed their hands together in satisfaction, but Van Deen scowled. "I do not need novices getting under my feet while I—"
"You're just as blind as Elaine," Nynaeve broke in. "They have experience making Aes Sedai take them for something other than what they are. They can work at your direction, and that will give you time to sleep and eat. I don't believe you're doing either."
She drew herself up, draping her shawl across her shoulders and along her arms. It was quite a performance. Short as she was, no taller than Zarya and markedly shorter than Van Deen or Kirstjan, she managed to seem the tallest one there by inches. It was a skill Elaine wished she could master. Although she would not try in a dress cut that way, Nynaeve was in danger of coming right out. Still, that did not diminish her presence. She was the essence of command.
"You will do it, Van Deen," she said firmly.
Van Deen's scowl faded slowly. But fade it did. Nynaeve stood higher in the power than she, and even if she never consciously thought of the fact, deeply ingrained custom made her yield, however unwillingly. By the time she turned to the two women in white, her face was as near composed as it had been since Adelius's murder, which just meant that the judge might not order an execution right now. Later, perhaps. Her gaunt face was calm and starkly grim.
"I did teach novices for a time," she said. "A short time. The mistress of novices thought I was too hard on my students." The pair's eagerness cooled a bit. "Her name was Sorela Bagand." Zarya's face went as pale as Kirstjan's, and Kirstjan swayed as if suddenly dizzy. As mistress of novices and later Ammerlin's seat, Sorela was a legend. The sort of legend that made you wake in the middle of the night sweating.
"I do eat," Van Deen said to Nynaeve, "but everything tastes like ashes."
With a curt gesture at the two novices, she led them away past Lan. They were staggering slightly as they followed.
"Stubborn woman," Nynaeve grumbled, frowning at the retreating backs, but there was more than a hint of sympathy in her voice. Still, she shifted her shawl irritably. "I know a dozen herbs that would help her sleep, but you won't touch them. I've half a mind to slip something into her evening wine."
A wise ruler, Elaine thought, knows when to speak and when not. Well, that was wisdom in anyone. She did not say that Nynaeve calling anyone stubborn was the rooster calling the pheasant proud.
Do you know what Rihanna's news is? She said instead.
Good news, of a sort, so I understand.
I haven't seen her this morning, the other woman muttered, still peering after Van Deen. I haven't been out of my rooms.
Abruptly, she gave herself a shake, and for some reason frowned suspiciously at Elaine. And then at Lan, of all things.
Unperturbed, he continued to stand guard. Nynaeve claimed her marriage was glorious. She could be shockingly frank about it with other women, but Elaine thought she must be lying to cover up disappointment.
Very likely Lan was ready for an attack, ready to fight, even when asleep. It would be like lying down beside a hungry lion. Besides, that stone face was enough to chill any marriage bed.
Luckily, Nynaeve had no idea what she thought.
The woman actually smiled.
An amused smile, oddly.
Amused and...
Could it be condescending? Of course not. Imagination.
I know where Rihanna is, Nynaeve said, settling her shawl back down to her elbows.
Come with me. I'll take you to her.
Elaine knew exactly where Rihanna would be, since she was not closeted with Nynaeve, but once again she schooled her tongue and let Nynaeve lead her. A sort of penance for arguing earlier when she should have tried to make peace.
Lan followed, those cold eyes scanning the halls. The servants they passed flinched when Lan's gaze fell on them. A youngish, pale-haired woman actually gathered her skirts and ran, bumping into a stand lamp and setting it rocking in her flight. That reminded Elaine to tell Nynaeve about Elania and Nayan, and about the spies. Nynaeve took it with surprising calm. She agreed with Elaine that they would know soon enough who had rescued the two women, with a dismissive sniff for Saritha's doubts. For that matter, she expressed surprise that they had not been taken right from Arangil long since.
I couldn't believe they were still there when we arrived in Camelin. Any fool could see they would be brought here sooner or later. Much easier to get them out of a small town.
A small town. Arangil would have seemed a great city to her once.
As for spies...
She frowned at a lanky, gray-haired man filling a gold-worked stand-lamp with oil and shook her head.
Of course there are spies. I knew there must be right from the start. You just have to watch what you say, Elaine. Don't say anything to anyone you don't know well unless you don't mind everyone knowing.
When to speak and when not, Elaine thought, pursing her lips. Sometimes that could be a true penance with Nynaeve. Nynaeve had her own information to impart. 18 of the kin who had accompanied them to Camelin were no longer in the palace. They had not run away, though. Since none was strong enough to travel, Nynaeve had woven the gateways herself, sending them deep into Altara and Amadicia and Tarabon, into the Shan Chan-held lands where they would try to find any of the kin who had not already fled and bring them back to Camelin. It would have been nice if Nynaeve had thought to inform her yesterday when they left, or better yet, when she and Rihanna reached the decision to send them. But Elaine did not mention that. Instead, she said, "That's very brave of them. Avoiding capture won't be easy."
"Brave, yes," Nynaeve said, sounding irritated. Her hand crept up to her braid again. "But that isn't why we chose them. Elise thought they were the most likely to run if we didn't give them something to do."
Glancing over her shoulder at Lan, she snatched her hand back down.
"I don't see how Egwene means to do it," she sighed. "All very well to say every one of the kin will be associated with the tower somehow, but how? Most aren't strong enough to earn the shawl. Many can't even reach accepted, and they certainly won't stand for being novices or accepted the rest of their lives."
This time Elaine said nothing because she did not know what to say. The promise had to be kept. She had made it herself. In Egwene's name, true, and at Egwene's order— but she had spoken the words herself, and she would not break her word. Only, she did not see how to keep it, unless Egwene came up with something truly wonderful. Rihanna Corley was just where Elaine had known she would be, in a small room with two narrow windows looking down on a small fountained courtyard deep in the palace, though the fountain was dry this time of year, and the glassed casements made the room a little stuffy. The floor was plain dark tile with no carpet, and for furnishings there were only a narrow table and two chairs. There were two people with Rihanna when Elaine entered. Elise Tengila, in simple high-necked gray, looked up from where she stood at the far end of the table.
Seemingly in her middle years, she was a woman of pleasant, unremarkable appearance, who was quite remarkable indeed once you came to know her, and could be very unpleasant indeed when it was called for. A single glance, and she returned to her study of what was going on at the table. Aes Sedai, warders, and daughter heirs did not impress Elise, not any longer. Rihanna herself was sitting on one side of the table, her face creased, and her hair more gray than not, in a green dress more elaborate than Elise's. She had been put out of the tower after failing her test for accepted, and offered a second chance, she had already adopted the colors of her preferred Aja. Across from her sat a plump woman in plain brown wool, her face set in stubborn defiance, and her dark eyes locked on Rihanna, avoiding the silvery, segmented eidom lying like a snake between them on the table. Her hands stroked the edge of the tabletop, though, and Rihanna wore a confident smile that deepened the fine lines at the corners of her eyes. "Don't tell me you've made one of them see reason," Nynaeve said before Lan had even shut the door behind them. She scowled at the woman in brown as though she wanted to box her ears, if not worse, then glanced at Elise. Elaine thought Nynaeve was a little in awe of Elise. The woman was far from strong in the power. She would never attain the shawl, but she had a way of taking charge when she wanted to and making everyone around her accept it, including Aes Sedai. Elaine thought she might be just a little in awe of Elise herself. "They still deny they can channel," Elise muttered, folding her arms beneath her breasts, and frowned at the woman facing Rihanna. "They can't really, I suppose, but I can feel something. Not quite the spark of a woman born to it, but almost. It's as if she were right at the brink of being able to channel, one foot poised to step over. I have never sensed anything like it before. Well, at least they don't try to attack us with their fists anymore. I think I put them straight on that, at least." The woman in brown flashed a sullen, angry glare at her, but jerked her eyes away from Elise's firm gaze, her mouth twisting in a sickly grimace. When Elise set somebody straight, they were set very straight indeed. The woman's hands continued to shift along the tabletop. Elaine did not think she was aware of it. "They still deny seeing the flows, too, but they're trying to convince themselves," Rihanna said in her high, musical voice. She continued to meet the other's obstinate stare with a smile. Any sister might have envied Rihanna's serenity and presence. She had been eldest of the knitting circle, the highest authority among the kin. According to their rule, the knitting circle existed only in Ebudar, but she was still the oldest among those in Camelin, 100 years older than any Aes Sedai in living memory, and she could match any sister with her air of calm command. "They claim we trick them with the power. Use it to make them believe the eidom can hold them. Sooner or later they will run out of lies." Drawing the eidom to her, she opened the collar's catch with a deft motion. "Shall we try again, Marley?" The woman in brown, Marley, still avoided looking at the length of silver metal in Rihanna's hands, but she stiffened, and her hands fluttered on the table's edge. Elaine sighed. What a gift Rand had sent her. A gift! 29 Seanchan Suldam neatly held by Eidam and 5 Damani. She hated that word. It meant leashed one, or simply leashed, but that was what they were. 5 Damani who could not be uncollared for the simple reason that they would try to free the Seanchan women who had held them prisoner. Leopards tied with string would have been a better gift. At least leopards could not channel. They had been given into the kin's keeping because no one else had the time. Still, she had seen right away what to do with the Suldam. Convince them that they could learn to channel, then send them back to the Seanchan. Apart from Nynaeve, only Egwene, Avienda, and a few of the kin knew her plan. Nynaeve and Egwene were doubtful, but however hard the Suldam tried to hide what they were once they were returned, eventually one would slip. If they did not just report everything right away. Seanchan were peculiar. Even the Seanchan among the Damani truly believed that any woman who could channel had to be collared for the safety of everyone else. Suldam, with their ability to control women wearing the eidom, were highly respected among the Seanchan. The knowledge that Suldam themselves were able to channel would shake the Seanchan to their core, maybe even break them apart. It had seemed so simple in the beginning. "Rihanna, I understood that you had good news," she said. If the Suldam haven't started breaking down, what is it? Elise frowned at Lan, who stood silent guard in front of the door. She disapproved of him knowing their plans, but she said nothing.
A moment, if you please, Rihanna murmured.
It was not really a request. Nynaeve truly had done her job too well.
There is no need for her to listen.
The glow of Sidar suddenly shone around her. She moved her fingers as she channeled, as though guiding the flows of air that bound Marley to her chair, then tied them off, and cupped her hands as though shaping in her sight the ward against sound that she wove around the woman. The gestures were no part of channeling, of course, but necessary to her, since she had learned the weaves that way. The Suldam's lips twisted slightly in contempt. The one power did not frighten her at all.
"Take your time," Nynaeve put in acidly, planting her hands on her hips. "There's no hurry."
Rihanna did not intimidate her the way Elise did. Then again, Nynaeve no longer intimidated Rihanna either. Rihanna did take her time, studying her handiwork, then nodded with satisfaction before rising. The kin had always tried to channel as little as was necessary, and she took great pleasure in the freedom to use Sidar as often as she wished, as well as pride in weaving well. "The good news," she said, standing and smoothing her skirts, "is that three of the Damani seem ready to be let out of their collars. Perhaps." Elaine's eyebrows rose, and she exchanged surprised looks with Nynaeve. Of the five Damani Taim had handed over to them, one had been taken by the Seanchan on Toman Head, and another in Tanchico. The others had come from Seanchan.
Two of the Seanchan women, Marilla and Jilari, still say they deserve to be collared, need to be collared.
Rihanna's mouth tightened with distaste, but she paused for only a moment. They truly seem horrified at the prospect of freedom.
Olivia has stopped that. Now she says it was only because she was afraid she would be retaken. She says she hates all the Suldam, and she certainly makes a good show of it, snarling at them and cursing them, but...
She shook her head slowly in doubt.
She was collared at 13 or 14, Elaine, she's not certain which, and she's been Damani for 400 years. Do we dare let her free? A Seanchan Wilder who could tear the entire palace apart?
Most of the kin shared the Aes Sedai view of Wilders, which they counted as any woman not trained in the tower, including the Windfinders. Wilders were beneath notice, and usually untrustworthy and unpredictable.
Sisters who knew Nynaeve had learned to take care with that word around her. She could become quite snappish when it was used in a disparaging tone. Now she just stared at Rihanna. Perhaps she was trying to find the answer.
None of the other Damani had more than average strength in the power, but Olivia was strong. Stronger than Nynaeve. Much stronger. And with 400 years' experience channeling as a weapon, even if under another's control. Elaine knew what her own answer would be, but this had nothing to do with claiming the throne or Andor. It was a decision for Aes Sedai. And here, that meant it was Nynaeve's to make.
"If you don't," Lan said quietly from the door, "then you might as well give her back to the Seanchan."
He was not at all abashed by the dark looks given him by the four women who heard his deep voice toll those words like a funeral gong.
"You will have to watch her closely, but keep her collared when she wants to be free, and you are no better than they are."
"That isn't for you to say, warder," Elise said firmly. He met her stern stare with cool equanimity, and she gave a small disgusted grunt and threw up her hands.
"You should give him a good talking to when you get him alone, Nynaeve."
Nynaeve must have been feeling her awe of the women particularly strongly, because her cheeks colored. "Don't think that I will not," she said lightly. She did not look at Lan at all. Finally condescending to notice the chill, she pulled her shawl up onto her shoulders and cleared her throat. "He is right, though. At least we don't have to worry about the other two. I'm just surprised it took them this long to stop imitating those fools Seanchan."
"I'm not so sure," Rihanna sighed. "Kara was a sort of wise woman on Toman Head, you know. Very influential in her village. A Wilder, of course. You would think she'd hate the Seanchan, but she doesn't. Not all of them. She is very fond of the Suldam captured with her, and very anxious that we shouldn't hurt any of the Suldam." L'Amour is just 19, a pampered noblewoman with the extreme bad luck to have the spark manifest itself in her on the very day Tanchico fell. She says she hates the Shan Chen and wants to make them pay for what they did to Tanchico, but she answers to Lari, her Damani name, as readily as to L'Amour, and she smiles at the Suldam and lets them pet her. I don't mistrust them, not the way I do Olivia, but I doubt either one could stand up to a Suldam. I think if a Suldam ordered either to help her escape, she would. And I fear she might not fight too hard if the Suldam tried to collar her again. After she stopped speaking, the silence stretched. Nynaeve seemed to look inward, struggling with herself. She gripped her braid with both hands, then let go and folded her arms tight across her chest, the fringe of her shawl swaying as she hugged herself. She glared at everyone except Lan. Him she did not so much as glance at. Finally, she took a deep breath and squared herself to face Rihanna and Alice. "We must remove the Eidam. We will hold on to them until we can be sure. And L'Amour after. She needs to be put in white. And we will make sure they are never left alone, especially with the Suldam. But the Eidam come off." She spoke fiercely as if expecting opposition, but a broad smile of approval spread across Elaine's face. The addition of three more women they could not be sure of hardly counted as good news, but there had been no other choice. Rihanna merely nodded acceptance, after a moment, but a smiling Elise came around the table to pat Nynaeve's shoulder, and Nynaeve actually blushed. She tried to hide it behind clearing her throat roughly and grimacing at the Shan Chan woman in her cage of Sidar, but her efforts were not very effectual, and Lan spoiled them in any case.
"Taishar Manetheran," he said softly.
Nynaeve's mouth fell open, then curled into a tremulous smile. Sudden tears glistened in her eyes as she spun to face him, her face joyous. He smiled back at her, and there was nothing cold in his eyes. Elaine struggled not to gape. Light! Maybe he did not chill their marriage bed after all. The thought made her cheeks warm. Trying not to look at them, her eyes fell on Marley, still fastened in her chair. The Shan Chan woman was staring straight ahead, tears flowing down her plump cheeks. Straight ahead, at the weaves holding sound away from her. She could not deny seeing the weaves now, but when she said as much, Rihanna shook her head. "They all weep if they are made to look at weaves very long, Elaine," she said wearily, and a touch sadly. "But once the weaves are gone, they convince themselves we tricked them. They have to, you understand, else they'd be Damani, not Suldam. No, it will take time to convince the mistress of the hounds that she is really a hound herself. I am afraid I really haven't given you any good news at all, have I?" "Not very much," Elaine told her. "None, really. Just another problem to stack up on all the rest. How much bad news could be stacked before the pile buried you?" She had to get some good soon.